There's a new book out called Gospel Bound, and the co-author of that is Sarah Ekoff Zylstra, and she joins us right now on Vocal Point to discuss this issue. It's really about how Christians are making a difference in our world. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Sarah, it's good to have you on the program.
Oh, it's so good to be here.
Okay. Tell us all about this book and hold nothing back, especially in an age where the media so often puts down Christianity and essentially presents the Christian faith as if it's a negative force. But you and your co-author, Colin Hansen, basically show, no, actually, you know, gospel-bound Christians, true, sincere Christians, are making a positive difference in our world.
Yeah. Let me tell you the story of this book. It's so interesting. I actually started, you could say it started about 3 or 4 years ago. I started writing for Colin at the Gospel Coalition, and he said, why don't we tell stories of where God is at work in the world and Christians who are doing amazing things? And I was like, I don't know how many of those we're going to get. I mean, when you're listening to the news and everything that, you know, you're reading the headlines, it doesn't seem like there's anybody out there doing anything. But we tried it. We're like, well, we'll just try it and see how it goes. Maybe we'll be out of stories in a couple of months. Maybe no one will read them. I don't know. So we started looking for them, and it has been 3 or 4 years now, and we are still going strong. We have found more stories of Christians who sincerely love the Lord, who are doing amazing things. God's Spirit is at work all over the world. So we're just trying to tell the rest of the story. Those negative news headlines aren't wrong, but boy, there's so much more out there that God is at work and his people are at work doing. So we then, when we were writing Gospel Bound, Colin was trying to think of like, boy, we live in an age where it's so discouraging and people are so anxious and so divided. And how can we find our way forward? And what he came to, he was reading Romans, and Paul is writing to a church that's in the margins, much like the American church is, you could argue, is sliding back down toward the margins. Paul's writing to the church where she's always been, right? Like on the edges of society and laying out pretty clearly, here's things that you should do. Live with honor, suffer with joy, care for the weak, invite somebody else over, set another place at your table, love your enemies. And we just thought, hey, we've been watching Christians do this for the last 3 or 4 years. So we wrote the book and we gave each one of those instructions a chapter, and we explained a little bit about, you know, what Paul was talking about and how that applies to us today, and then filled it up with stories of people who are doing that. Even before we wrote the book, they were doing it because that's what God said to do.
And the title means Gospel Bound?
Yeah. So we were thinking about what to call it, and this is just a word that we thought was perfect because it can mean a couple of different things. One is like you're tied to the gospel, right? Like people who love the Lord and not just, you know, culturally or politically, or I go to this church once in a while, but people who really love God, they're tied to the gospel. So they're tied to these instructions. God is at work in them. And also they're bound for something better. They're bound for another world. They're bound for heaven, for an eternal life with Jesus, which when you're really hanging on to that gives the world here a completely different perspective. You can afford to be more generous and more hospitable and more gentle with people when you know, this isn't all I have. I have forever. So if something takes a few minutes longer over here, I'm not worried about that. I'm time rich. I'm not worried about, you know, how much time something takes or how much effort something takes.
Okay, so...
And then also the
yeah,
third...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, after you. If you weren't finished, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one more thing. Like, we like the idea of as gospel-bound Christians move along, it's not like trudging slowly. It's like bounding along. Like, even through hard situations, there's a joy in the Lord and a joy that comes from grabbing onto him and his word that just changes the way you walk through life. So we looked at bound three different ways.
Okay, and let's go ahead and methodically just, you know, we have a few minutes. We have about 10 minutes left. Why don't we just go ahead and have you tell a few stories here. What was one of the stories that really impressed you that you and your co-author decided to write about?
Yeah. So a few years ago, we met a girl in Louisville called Rochelle Starr, and this is her story. She loves Jesus. She's a gospel-bound Christian, and she would drive along to work, and she saw a sign. She'd see a sign along the road for a strip club, as we all do when you're driving along once in a while. So she, and it bothered her, and she felt in her spirit she should do something about it. So she said to her husband, I think God is calling me to work in the sex industry. And he said to her, that's what Jesus would do. And so my favorite thing is that she didn't write a mission statement. She didn't gather a board of directors. She didn't write a curriculum. All she did was took a couple girls from her church, and they go sit on the curb outside the strip club like twice a week. I think it was Tuesdays and Thursdays for months, for almost a year, and they would pray. So they weren't holding signs, and all they were doing was praying. And I can't tell you how many of my stories start this way, where a couple of Christians are saying, we see a problem, we have no idea what to do about it, but we're just going to bring it to the Lord regularly with each other over and over again. These are Christians praying together over and over again for a specific purpose. And after about a year, she felt in her spirit like it was time to go into this strip club. So she did. She walked in with her friends. And they talked to the owner of the club and said, we would like to do something kind and loving for the girls who work here. And his mouth fell open, as you can imagine. And he said to them, what did you want to do? And she said, well, we're Christians. And he said, I have never had a Christian in here before that I knew about, like maybe unknowingly, but Christians don't come in here. And she's like, well, here I am. And could I bring in a dinner for them? And he's like, well, I guess. And so she did. She came back the next week with her girlfriends and they from church, and they had made chicken and mashed potatoes and greens, and they laid it out for the girls who were dancing to eat from. And some of them, once they found out that they were from a church, didn't want to eat it. They were afraid it might be poisoned. So they were afraid of the food, but eventually, you know, some of them ate it. And then Rochelle and her friends came back the next week, and then they came back the next week, and they came back the next week. So all they're doing is bringing in chicken or, you know, mashed potatoes or whatever. Every week they would bring in a meal. And eventually what happens, Jerry, and what had happened to you and me if we ate a meal together every single week, is we would start to talk to each other and trust each other and become friends with each other. So after a while, she's hearing from these girls, hey, I always wanted to go to culinary school, but through the events in my life, this is where I am. She said, I've never met a girl who was stripping who hadn't been abused as a child. And so all of them had stories of other things they had wanted to do. Or man, she helped one girl go home, took her home after work one night and went up to her apartment, and there's nothing in it except a sleeping bag. So there's just physical needs that she could meet, and she didn't know where else to turn. And so she turned to her church. And of course, if you ask a church to, you know, bring in their old couches and dishes for someone's apartment, you'll get a parking lot full. And so her church began to help these girls, and slowly, slowly a ministry started up. So here we are about 10 years later, and Rochelle she started a bakery, because when you ask girls to leave the sex industry, you have to give them something else that they can do. They need to make money so they can live. So she started a bakery, and then she started another one, and then she started another one. So she's got three bakeries where when she pulls girls out of this industry, they can have something productive to do. She has spread to 5 other cities, and she holds conferences for people who want to do it all over the country. She is just teaching how one relationship at a time. She said more than 600 girls have left the sex industry, hundreds have come to Christ, and thousands of lives have been changed. Not only those girls who were dancing, but also those girls coming from church who were mentoring them or bringing food or helping in other ways. She has made a tremendous difference.
What's her name? Examples. Yeah, okay. And what's her name, and what's Rochelle. Her website?
Yeah, her name is Rochelle Starr, and her website is Scarlet Hope.
Scarlet Hope, probably .org or .com. Okay. Oh, good. And then we have time probably for one more story if it's going to be this long. No, it's very powerful. But by the way, I wonder if, you know, at the end of the day, the sex club owner regretted having allowed her to come in, because some of those dancers would leave, you know, and then, you know, join the Christians.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. That's what I asked too. And she said, so eventually she made her way into all of Louisville's strip clubs. So there's like 23 or 24, and she's in all of them. She said, it's spotty. Sometimes I get kicked out because they like it when I'm there, because I'm providing support and helping. You know, these are girls who are wounded and sometimes don't show up for work, or sometimes show up drunk, or, you know, to get through it. And so they like that someone is helping them. But you're exactly right. They're also losing all their employees. And so she's in and she's out, and then they'll let her come in, and then they kick her out, and then they let her come in, and then they kick her out. So
yeah, it's like it's like Paul in Philippi, you know, with the lady, the little girl that was demon possessed, and these are servants of the Most High God.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's exactly like that. Okay, we have 4 minutes left. How about another story, a shorter version?
Okay, I'll try. Okay. So there is a town in Iowa called Cedar Rapids that is 86% white. And there's a pastor who worked there who really wanted his church to be multi-ethnic, but whatever, and he just wanted his people to pursue the gospel. He wanted his church to be a picture of the kingdom of God, but he couldn't get anybody who was African-American to walk in the door. And there was another church in Cedar Rapids that was primarily black. And their pastor also really, he wanted to reach the city, and he knew he was in a city that was majority white. And so he also wanted to have a multi-ethnic church, but their culture was so African-American, he could never get any white people to walk in the door. So these pastors happened to meet each other and become friends with each other. And they started praying together. Once a week or so, they would get together and pray. They were praying for each other's families and churches, and they just became friends. And then once in a while, they would do a pulpit swap, like, hey, let's just switch for this Sunday, which, you know, lots of pastors do. And then after a while, they said, let's do an Easter service together. So while they were watching their choir, they were sitting in the empty pews by each other. And both of these churches were healthy and growing. So nobody's dying. The African-American pastor said to his friend, you know, we have been looking for a new building because we're outgrowing our old one. But nothing is quite right. Like, this one's too big and this one's too small and this one doesn't have, you know, just isn't fitting. So can you just pray with me about that? Because that's, you know, Ben, we're just really discouraged about that. And the white pastor opened his mouth and he said, you know, the church you're looking at wouldn't be too big if we moved in there together. And then there was a moment of dead silence, they said, in which the white pastor thought, I can't believe I said that. That was probably really insensitive. I'm such an idiot. Why did I say that? And then his black friend said, I was thinking the same thing. Mm. And so they went home and told their wives, like, do you think we could join their congregations? Like, their theology was really aligned. So their wives were like, yeah, like, let's try it. And they went to their elder boards and said, do you think we could join? Our churches should join together. And their elder boards were like, maybe, let's look at it. And so they looked into it and they had to sort out, like, okay, here's our theological positions on things. As I said, they were pretty well aligned. Obviously, this wouldn't work if your churches were on totally different pages. But they joined together and they took this to their elder board, said, let's try it. And they took it to their congregations and asked them. And these congregations voted 90%+, like 95% of both congregations voted to join together because their pastors had been sharing, not just any congregation would do this, but if your pastor shares with you a desire over and over again for your congregation to look like the kingdom of God, for you to reach out to more people, for you to be, to love all people made in the image of God, it just, they both wanted to do it. And so they did. And now they're in a church that's called New City Church in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And their church is growing together. They said the hardest part, of course, is the music. But they kept all their staff from both places and they kept both of their pastors. And they have been growing together. Their church, once the city saw what was happening, people were curious and came. And so their numbers overall have been growing. Mm. And they were able to take that second campus, which was smaller, and turn it into a community outreach. And so they have been running outreach programs out of that other building.
Oh, so, wow. All right. Well, we're basically out of time, but how about a 20-second concluding thought on the common ground between all these different stories?
God is at work and his people are at work. Instead of reading all, you know, put down your phone, instead of reading those, you know, we spend, and it's right to worry about the national news, but also look at what's just right around you. Look at the small things you can do. Can you bring a meal to a neighbor? Can you help someone fix their car? Can you volunteer at a pregnancy center? What are those small baby things that you can do that are real manageable? Sit with someone else at church or, you know, build a friendship somewhere. That's where people see the love of Christ in us, just in your own neighborhood.
All right, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. Is there a website for the book?
Yes, it is gospelboundbook.com.
Okay, gospelboundbook.com. Thank you so much, Sarah. All the best.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.